The date is Friday, December 6, 1985. Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women. Harold Kimball and Ann Fagan interviewing Julian Hast. Take two, side one. When we stopped last time, Mr. Hast, you were telling us about your return to Pittsburgh and the years when you worked in the stogie business. I wonder if you could tell us what you remember about that period of your life.
I don't have to get my... I started work in the stogie factory, making a brand called Dry Schlitz, which was named after Schlitz beer, but spelt wrong, spelt S-L-I-T-Z. I knew absolutely nothing about it, and I had a start at the beginning and learn all the different processes for making the stogie, which is really a cigar made out of different kinds of tobacco from the usual 5 or 10 cent cigar. The stogies we made sold at 2 for a nickel, and we made more than any other Pittsburgh concern. At the beginning, the employees were all Polish girls and women, including 14-year-olds who had to be allowed to go to school a certain length of time each week. We eliminated the girls after a short time, and after a few years, we installed cigar-making machines, which took the place, which increased our production and took the place of some of the women who had left us to go to other factories.
What was the address of the factory? Where was it located?
The factory was located near 40th and Liberty in Lawrenceville, below the Bloomfield Bridge. The machine was made possible through an invention of part of the machine by Oscar Hammerstein, the great impresario, who in his earlier days had been in the cigar business. In 1925, our radio station, KDKA, started to advertise, to sell advertising to some Pittsburgh concerns, and we were one of them, so that we were one of the very first companies in the world to do radio advertising. Our program was a program of music, playing operettas and popular songs, not jazz, and we were heard all over the world through shortwave radio.
Did you have some choice about the kind of music you were able to
listen? I was responsible in large part for the kind of programming that was done. I have letters from the West Indies, from London, and miraculously enough, from South Africa, telling of the receipt of our program 10,000 miles away. And in some of the letters, the programs were noted almost perfectly. Can you stop for a minute? Did I tell you that?
You did.
It's at
the very end of the last table.
All right.
What I'd also like you to think about from there is impressions of the Pittsburgh business community in the 20s, just your own feelings about what seemed to be going on in the city, if that's a comfortable thing for you to talk about.
Well, I never gave that any thought. I was going to continue and tell you that we continued in business until 1940.
Mm.
And the main reason for quitting was that the price of tobacco and wages under the NRA had gone up to such an extent that there was no money in it.
Well, that's very important history, and I would like that on the tape.
And
it's
also,
we're recording it. All this is on the tape.
I thought we were off.
No. Because I thought you were ready to talk. But that was pertinent information.
That's fine, right. May we go back to talk about the beginning of the...
Turn it off for a minute.
It's perfectly all right to have this discussion.
I'll turn it. Another reason for quitting business is that we had what was called at that time a sit-down strike, which meant that our employees came into the factory and wouldn't leave.
Were they unionized at this time?
No, they were not unionized, but I think they wanted to form a union.
Oh.
The sit-down strike was something that was occurring all over the country. I think it started in Detroit in the automobile industry.
Well,
all right, turn it off for a minute. Now you want to change completely.
No. I have another question to ask you about it. I don't know. In this sit-down strike, was it more wages that they wanted? And can you tell us a bit about that?
In other words, what did you pay in those days? That would be interesting for someone doing research. What was the pay scale? No idea. Okay.
Because at that time, money was worth about one-tenth what it is today,
mm-hmm.
So I don't remember.
Do you remember their demands, what it is they wanted?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what they wanted when they staged the sit-down?
Actually, I think they read in the paper about these strikes all over, the sit-down strikes. I think they were, I don't know that they were sure of what they did want. But anyway, that was one of the reasons why we quit business.
Oh, and you quit?
In 1940.
When did it start?
What was the year of the beginning?
After that, of course, I went to work for our competitors in Wheeling, the Marsh Stogies.
Did you move to Wheeling at that time?
Do you want anything about that on the tape?
Sure. What kind of community was Wheeling then, as you remember?
Well, they had a lovely Jewish community. Very nice.
Were there synagogues?
Sure.
This was in, 1940. 40.
Mm-hmm. No. And I was there during the war for 4 years.
May we go back, Julian, to the 30s and the 20s, and your memories of Pittsburgh then, the Depression years, for example. Can you tell us what you remember?
Well, I was, during the NRA days, I was the representative for our industry on the NRA. Is this connected?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell us what you remember about that. That's a fascinating kind of work to do.
What?
That your work for the NRA and that whole period in the country's history.
I wish you'd turn it off because I can't...
Let's go back, if we may, to the period of the 20s and the 30s and your life in Pittsburgh. And then a little later on, we'll talk about Wheeling and the 40s. But let's now talk about what you've been saying about the families you knew, the friends you had, and what it was like.
Well, our friends were all members of Rotor Shoal Congregation. People such as the Aarons, the Franks, the Kaufmans, the Blooms, and so forth and so forth. They were my parents' social friends, and their children were our social friends. They all lived in the early days on the north side, and eventually all moved to Squirrel Hill. A great many of them moved to Murdoch Farms after that was established. I've already told where we lived.
You also mentioned the Hill District and the community there.
Yes, now, the immigrants from Eastern Europe all originally lived in the Hill District, and as their circumstances improved over the years, they all moved to Squirrel Hill. Most of them south of Fork Street. Our friends practically all live north of Fork on such streets as Northumberland and Whiteman and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember much about Jewish communal life in Pittsburgh? What Rota Sholem's involvement, the other synagogues?
No, I knew nothing about
it. How about things that were happening in the city at large? The flood, for example, in 1936. That period, do you have any recollections of those times?
The what?
Of the flood.
You have to speak loud. You're not talking about that.
Yes, can you recollect the flood?
Yes, I remember
period?
The flood very well. Our factory had been started by the wholesale firm of L. Goldsmith Brothers and Company, who were on Liberty Avenue. Later, they moved to the Boulevard of the Allies near Wood Street. And in 1936, they were flooded out. As a result of that, they moved to Melwood Street, Hoffbaum Boulevard, where there was no danger of floods. And after returning from Wheeling in 1944, I joined the Goldsmith, the company that was then known as Goldsmith Black, B-L-A-C-K, and became treasurer of that company.
Can you tell us what you remember about the time in Wheeling, about your life there, your family's life there?
Yes, in Wheeling, my daughter went to high school. My two sons were in the army and left us within a few years after we moved to Wheeling. My older son David in the Air Corps, where he became an officer, and my younger son John in the uh, Could you turn it off for a second?
Yeah.
Try to remember.
All right, so we're now talking about that time in Wheeling, a daughter in high school,
yes,
and your son's in the Army.
My wife, who was always very active, joined the Junior League and drove an ambulance for a while, taking people for treatment at the hospital. We became members of the group that belonged to the Reformed Synagogue. A very lovely group of people.
Was it unusual for
our closest friends were the Goods, who owned one of the main department stores in Wheeling.
Was it unusual for a woman, a Jewish woman, to join the Junior League?
Not in Wheeling, but in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
It was unusual.
Yes. So your wife was not the only member, the only Jewish member of the Junior League in Wheeling?
I don't know that she may have been. She may have been.
You mentioned your sons and the Army. Those were, of course, the years leading up to the war. Do you have some strong impressions of those that you'd like to talk about?
I was
about
going to
you?
Talk about my family as a whole.
Please do. Please do.
You've had enough about Wheeling.
Whatever you want to tell us about your family as a whole.
I haven't talked about my family, of which I am extremely proud. We had three children, David, John, and Barbara. David has two children, Tom and Dora. Tom is a successful real estate man in Boulder, Colorado. I attended his wedding last year, which was rather unusual, inasmuch as it was a Buddhist wedding.
Huh. Was it outdoors or?
No, it was in a Buddhist church.
Huh.
When he was at college in the West, he became interested in Buddhism, and I think that was one reason why he moved to Boulder, because it was more or less a center for Buddhists at that time. He now has a daughter who was born last year. And a very lovely wife who is also a Buddhist.
Do you remember the year of the wedding in Boulder?
I think it was.
Thanks.
Wait a minute. Turn it off a minute.
All right.
You've been talking about your grandson, Tom, who lives in Boulder.
Yeah. Now I want to talk a little about David. He spent about 3 years at Cornell, and unfortunately, he was part of the staff of the Cornell Daily Sun, and he spent so much time on the newspaper that he neglected his studies,
yeah,
and he was busted out.
Yeah.
And when he came back, my wife suggested that he go to a college and learn something about aeronautics. And this stood him in very good stead when the war broke out.
Yes.
because he joined the Air Force and eventually became a major.
What year are we talking about now? When did he join the Air Force? Do you recall?
Shortly after we got in the war.
So it would have been 41?
Yes.
Fine.
He moved to Wheeling with us and until he was called up.
Oh, it was that okay.
He moved to Wheeling and then went into the service in 41.
Yeah.
I see.
After the war, he went into the insurance business of Bunsmeyer, Hast, and Herzog. And then later, when that business was dissolved, he formed his own agency with a very fine suite of offices on Center Avenue. He represented the Northwestern Mutual and was so successful in selling insurance that a year or two ago he received word that he had sold more insurance for Northwestern than any agent they had ever had.
Hmm. That's quite a distinction. Now, David, of course, lives in Pittsburgh.
Yes. In one point, turn it off, I have to ask you a question.
David's work in Israel and in the Jewish community.
Yes. David has been, is it on again? David has been very active in the Jewish community, serving on the Federation as treasurer and helping to raise a great deal of money for the Federation. A year or two ago, he did one of the nicest things that I've heard of in a long time. In the town of Tirat HaKarmel in Israel, which is a town which Pittsburgh has taken over in a philanthropic way, he established a playground which is known as the Eleanor G. Hast Memorial in honor of his mother, of whom he was extremely fond.
Would you like to tell us about your other children as well?
I
want to talk some more about David?
I'm talking about his daughter.
All right, fine.
His daughter Dora is extremely musical and teaches music. She is taken up two very unusual instruments, the harpsichord and the recorder.
Excuse me, where does Dora live?
In New York. She teaches music in Brooklyn Heights. Some months ago, she and her gentleman friend went to India to study Indian music and spent 6 months there, fortunately, after the monsoon season.
Where in India, do you recall, or did they travel?
Yeah, was it Calcutta? I believe their headquarters were in Calcutta. After 6 months there, she went to Ireland and studied Irish music And now she's back in Brooklyn teaching. In a school there. That's enough if she's not married. Dora is not married, unfortunately. My second son, John, was also in the service as a non-com. He joined when he was only about 18 years old.
Did he serve overseas?
Or? Yeah, he served overseas. On one occasion, he had the good luck to meet his brother in France. John is also a Northwestern agent, selling an entirely different group of people. David's mostly the Jewish community. John's mostly the educational community.
Is this in Pittsburgh also?
Yes. And professional men. He has two sons. John Stephen and Larry. Larry, unfortunately, was born deaf. And as a result, both his parents had to learn the sign language. And his mother became so interested in teaching the deaf that she joined the faculty of the School of the Deaf, and then later the Board of Education. She's now in charge of special education for the board. Mm-hmm. She and her name is Barbara. She and John were married when she was 17. I still remember his going to Philadelphia, where she came from, for a wedding of a friend of his who married her sister. And he came back and told his mother that he had met a lovely 13-year-old, and when she was old enough, he was going to marry her. 4 years later, he did.
That's a lovely story. Other son?
Those are the two sons.
Yes.
My daughter Barbara, I can talk about for the next hour. She has 5 children, 4 boys and a girl. She kept at it until she had a girl. Although she went to
Antioch?
Yeah. She went to Antioch College, and there she met a young man named Robert Sonnenberg, whom I may have mentioned before.
Yes.
A Catholic. They were married they agreed to become, what do you call
it? Unitarians.
And, They went to the Unitarian Church in Memphis, where they lived for many years. Her husband is an engineer, now retired, sanitary engineer.
She has a political career that you might want to tell us about.
After they moved to Memphis from Chicago, she decided to run for the state legislature. No Tennessee woman had ever been a member of the legislature, but she tried anyway, unsuccessfully. A couple of years later, she ran for the Memphis School Board and was elected, and was a member for a number of years. After that, she ran for the city.
One second.
Is it over?
You can keep talking, you know.
After that, she ran for the city council and was elected to that and is still a member. Last year, she was chairman of the council.
Okay.
Okay, we're just going to turn the tape.
Did you get that?
Yes.
Yeah. Before...
I have to talk about her family.
Till it gets the last chapter.